Hi, folks. In a couple of minutes, I'll be interviewing Bhaskar Sunkara on what a left can do to force the Biden administration to take the bold steps necessary to win the political support of working people and thus undermine the ominous threat of Trump and Trumpism. Also, create a far more equal, democratic, and sustainable country. But before that, I want to first summarize the work of the American Prospect magazine and others. Work that details what Biden could and should do and would not need any legislation or approval by a Republican Senate. How? Just by executive orders of the president, Trump did 56, Obama more, and also by appointing secretaries of the many federal agencies who changed the priorities of those agencies so he could raise the federal minimum wage, cancel student debt, break up the big banks. If everybody wants one, a bank account, you could hold crooked CEOs accountable and close a slew of tax loopholes. That's the economy. Here's what Biden could do for medical care and health. He could change Medicaid regulations to allow far more people to become eligible and far fewer people refuse care for minor technicalities. He could save many lives by requiring the Center on Medicare and Medicaid Services to tighten its regulations and enforce them about patient safety, and by requiring public health outreach for all chronic diseases, enabling their better management in the community. Again, without signing a single new law, our next president can lower prescription drug prices and also cancel Trump's withdrawal from the World Health Organization. Here's what he could do for the environment. He could force divestment from fossil fuel projects, mandate reductions of greenhouse gas emissions. And on climate change, you could appoint a Secretary of Energy to devote a large part of that department's budget, $8 billion research budget, to find cities who want to become zero carbon cities, no greenhouse gas emissions, thus become model cities to show U.S. North Americans what can be done. And he could rejoin the Paris Climate Agreement. As to criminal justice, his Justice Department could go after white-collar environmental crimes that now, under both the Republicans and Democrats, that's quite rare. But for the last 50 years, they routinely prosecuted people, especially people of color, especially black people, who get long sentences for small amounts of drugs, including marijuana. Indeed, Biden could effectively legalize marijuana. How? By telling the DEA to delist marijuana from its list of controlled substances and then promulgate regulations to ensure safety. Biden would appoint an attorney general who would put a priority on enforcing the civil rights laws, especially housing and job discrimination, and he could repeal the travel ban on Muslim-majority nations and restore the DACA program that kept dreamers in the U.S., again, not having to go to Congress for new law, just by using the powers given to him and by appointing secretaries in the many federal agencies to interpret, build regulations, and apply them in a generous spirit. And that then gives us some background on my interview with Bhaskar Sunkara. Hello, Bhaskar Sunkara. Welcome again to KBOO.
Hi, Bill. Thanks for having me.
Bhaskar Sunkara founded and remains the editor of Jacobin Magazine. It's a quarterly magazine. It has a rich website with multiple articles on more immediate news and breaking news and developments. Now 10 years old, it quickly gained supporters, writers, and readers to become a lead voice of the U.S. left. In addition to Jacobin, Bhaskar Sunkara writes, including the book The Socialist Manifesto, The Case for Radical Politics in an Era of Extreme Inequality. And he's a columnist for the Guardian newspaper, Guardian USA. One of his latest pieces is titled Brace Yourselves, The Next Donald Trump Could Be Much Worse. In that op-ed article, the first sentence reads, if Biden governs as an establishment Democrat, it won't be long before the U.S. elects another, far more effective Donald Trump. And later in the op-ed, he contains, Biden won simply because of how unpopular Trump is. Democrats will need to offer Americans something different, a type of politics that can activate regular working-class voters and deliver on bread-and-butter economic issues. If the Biden administration is to create a stable and responsive government. And in your book, you point out that the climate crisis creates the real possibility that, I quote, capitalism could destroy civilization as we know it, that intensification of the climate crisis will be the test by which future generations judge us. So, Bhaskar Sankara, that brings us to our topic today. Biden could govern differently. He has all the tools necessary to greatly improve the economy for working people, thus winning their confidence. And his administration could start the process for stopping climate change, short of that planetary cataclysm that appears much too soon ahead. How could the left organize and force the Biden administration to govern differently?
Well, I think we need to have the mentality of saying that we, at the moment, are an opposition movement. Our goal is not to provide critical support for the Biden administration. It's to create a third new current in American politics, because we know that the neoliberal center of Biden has helped to create the right-wing populist movement of Trump. And we know that if we just double down on the policies of Obama, Clinton, Biden, we're going to end up with another, even worse, Donald Trump. So what we're trying to do, I think, in the Democratic Socialists of America, what Jacobin is trying to do, what I know a lot of your listeners are taking part in, is the creation of a progressive coalition to the left of liberalism, composed of socialists, composed of a whole host of other people who are committed to Medicare for all, a Green New Deal, and real change, a real alternative on the left. And to me, I think that means that our primary goal at the moment, while we're out of power, is to change the conditions in which legislation is being written, not necessarily write legislation directly. And I just mean that metaphorically. Obviously, we're going to write bills like Medicare for All bill and write proposals like the Green New Deal. But I think mentally, that's a different approach. And that's one reason why I'm hoping that Bernie Sanders is not offered. And if offered, he doesn't accept position as labor secretary, because I think he'll be much more valuable to us on the outside, with AOC and Ilhan Omar and Rashida, and even progressives like Pramila Jayapal and others. I think for starters, that's my approach. We're going to change the conditions in which Biden governs, and we're going to create urgency around the slow-moving crises that we're facing. If Biden doesn't feel that pressure and urgency from the left, he's only going to drift to his right. And we know from experience that Biden is someone who likes to work with Republicans. Things like entitlement reform, to put it euphemistically, attempts to cut Social Security and Medicare. We know that, you know, there's a lot that he'll capitulate and concede on unless he feels this pressure. But that different kind of approach, seeing us primarily as an opposition and not as a junior partner in a coalition.
What would that take on the ground, though, to change, as you pointed out, the conditions in which legislation and executive orders and the priorities of our federal agencies, which could be very, very different? There's plenty of law to work with that could be interpreted in quite radical ways. What does that though mean on the ground? It seems to me it's a great coalition. Some sort of crusade has to be developed with all of those people who marched in the Black Lives Matter, George Floyd struggle. There were millions and millions of people. There's so many people out there, it seems to me, who really want to do something and did it in the last election. Now they have to be enlisted in some kind of crusade to make sure that the Biden administration does what's necessary.
I know. I think your approach, your emphasis on what Biden can and should do is really important, because what we're going to hear from a lot of the mainstream media is that Biden can't do anything. What's likely to be a Republican Congress and a reduced majority in the House, and probably not having the Senate. But the truth is he can do a lot through his leadership and by executive order. He could set really aggressive targets on greenhouse gas emissions. He could use the buying power of the federal government to do a lot, and that's on climate alone. The military, obviously, is one of the biggest polluters on the planet, the U.S. military. I must say that I actually am not especially optimistic about our organizational capacity at the moment, in that I do feel like liberalism, a certain segment of liberalism, was galvanized against the obvious injustices and just brutal idiocy of Trump, because I think his policies were both brutal from the standpoint of not having regard for working people, especially working class people of color, but also just utterly incompetent in his handling of things like COVID. There was a big response to that. The question is, can liberals continue that activity even when there's someone else in the White House, someone who is a better statesman, probably is more empathetic as a human being? History does not necessarily bode well for those who want that to happen. Even a lot of these great, really inspiring mobilizations, these social movements like Black Lives Matter, haven't really left a sturdy institutional backdrop. I think they're a reminder that people are still interested in politics, that they can be mobilized to fight against injustice. But how do we reach back out to these people? Can we actually say that this is a coherent movement? There's groups like DSA, the Democratic Socialists of America, of which I'm a member, but we are still a largely middle-class organization. We have close to 100,000 members now, but these 100,000 members are operating in a country of 330 million people. There's groups like the Justice Democrats, but most of its success, along with the success of DSA, has been on the electoral front. We've been able to exploit that opening and to reach working-class people with our message of change, but we haven't been able to get them to turn out to meetings and to form any sort of stable organization so they can be reactivated between election cycles. Even Bernie Sanders' best effort to do that through Our Revolution has had really mixed results. I wish I could sit here and say we're in a great position to build some type of grassroots movement to push Biden to actually fulfill some of his promises and to make real change. But I feel like a lot of people really are exhausted after all these years of Trump and want to just go home. I am not seeing the urgency that we really need. And I think the big missing piece, I'm going to sound like a broken record, this is something socialists have been saying for decades and decades in the U.S., but our big missing piece has always been the weakness of our labor movement. And even now, union density is only 9-10% lower in the private sector. But they're still the organizations that have the greatest capacity to turn out and mobilize people, who still have the institutional resources to do it. And it's almost like a chicken or the egg bind, because with what's going on in this election, given the congressional majorities, it is not possible, I think, for labor to get something like Hard Check, which can help expand its size. And until it's stronger, we're going to have a very hard time getting pro-labor, pro-working class majorities in Congress. So I wish I had a more definitive or more optimistic answer. Bill, maybe you have a little bit more optimism than I have, or maybe I'm slightly in a pessimistic mood today.
This is Bill Resnick for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I'm talking to Bhaskar Sankara, founded, reigns the editor of Jacobin Magazine, a quarterly rich website with multiple articles on breaking news and developments. It's become a lead voice on the left. We've been talking about how the Biden administration has to be pushed to have all the tools for doing a lot of important things, even without the Senate. But to use them, they have to be pushed. Bhaskar's been pessimistic about building the great crusade that I'm hoping materializes through, of course, the efforts of the left and many other people. Bhaskar, I just read recently a piece on how a Maine politician, her name was Chloe Maxman, won a Republican district in Maine. She had 200 volunteers, and what they did is started out with deep canvassing. That is, not just going to homes and talking to people and asking them to vote for Chloe, but in fact, really engaging people in conversation of what they want and what they think the U.S. ought to be doing. And there really is, even among the Trumpies, people are in favor of a higher minimum wage, of cuts in the military budget. They might even be in favor of not having police dealing with low levels of drug possession and have people much more able to help people get off of drug habits and assist them in straightening out. It seems to me Americans are basically liberal on most issues, but they're also worried and angry and ready to reject any establishment candidate.
I completely agree that Americans are ready for economic egalitarianism, that we already have those majorities now, and that we can continue to win many elections even with our platform. So I'm completely on the table there. And obviously in the span of the last 5-10 years, we're much better off now than we were then. You know, we actually have a visible and coherent left. But I guess the question is, there's this existing small but real left current that's winning elections. There's broad acceptance of a lot of left-wing ideas, particularly our economically egalitarian ideas, Medicare for all, $15 minimum wage, all these other things. But how do we actually get to the point where we can say that there's a movement beyond elections on the left? And it seems to me that we're getting there. We're pretty close to creating the types of organizations that can make change and can do something like pressure Biden. But for now, the left that we're seeing is more a sign of things to come. And our real breakthroughs are happening in the electoral phase. So in other words, I'm very confident that, or I'm fairly confident, that we'd be able to pressure a Biden-like figure in 2024 and 2028, you know, in the future, more effectively. I'm just not positive what our mobilizational capacity on the ground is now. Just to differentiate and clarify, I'm not sure if that distinction makes sense.
Yeah, I actually agree with that. It's a long-term process. On the other hand, climate change could become irreversible in 10 years, say the climate scientists. This is not a fantasy of the final crisis of capitalism by the left. Relatively sober climate scientists tell us we don't have that much time. Biden could make a start, it seems to me. He's promising to go back to the Paris Agreement, which was really an agreement to do not very much. Bhaskar, it seems to me that you're right. The labor movement has to be a real major factor. But right now, unlike most of the 20th century, right now we have social movements, many, many different kinds around the environment, feminist issues, reproductive rights, alternative sexualities, of course, Black Lives Matter, and Black liberation. In all of them, it seems to me, there's a core of thought, especially Black Lives Matter, their great position paper, calling for all of us to get together to solve the great problems we're facing. And my sense is there's a possibility that it wouldn't be labor-led, but it could be a great coalition, which must include labor, of those various bodies of thought and movements that, in fact, do share a great deal. It seems to me we could imagine a second awakening of America, not maybe in 4 years, although we have to really protect against Trumpism, but over the next 10 or 15 years.
Well, I think we're already seeing that. We're already seeing the growth of a broad new progressive current. And we are seeing the breakdown of a certain style of centrist politics. We're seeing a lot of mainstream liberalism even moving to the left, and a lot of young people identifying with the Bernie-crat sphere of American politics. So I completely agree there. I would say, though, or I wouldn't frame it as the need for a movement of movements with all these different new currents, but rather just say we need working-class politics in all its diversity and complexity. And to me, some of those movements that you mentioned, I do have working class components. All of them have working class components, but they also contain other components and dimensions too. And what we need to say is that if you really want to achieve change in the U.S. when it comes to the sphere of, let's say, the conditions of Black Americans, then we need to be talking about the distribution of power and resources from those who have it to those who don't have it. And if we're doing that, we're talking about socialism. We're talking about redistribution. We're talking about material demands. That's a real component of the Black Lives Matter movement, but there's also other components, too, that are more symbolic. So I think we need to think hard about how we build a majoritarian working-class politics that takes oppression seriously, but also has something to offer for all working people in the United States across regions, across races, across all these other things. Because if you look at the top priorities of Black Americans, Latinos, and white Americans, they're the same. I mean, the order is slightly different. But if you look at polling after polling, people all want the same things. They want the ability to take care of their families, to earn enough money to do that. They care about jobs. They care about health care. They care about security. They care about all these other things where the left has compelling answers. And often I feel like on the left, and increasingly among a lot of young people on the left, there's, I guess, a tendency to maybe think that Black Americans only care about issues of oppression and that we can't possibly create a narrative that can reach all people. When we look at these actual conversations door to door, I would imagine that they're very similar, whether you're having it in rural Maine, an area that voted for Trump, or you're having it in Brooklyn, New York, in a Black working class area that voted overwhelmingly for Biden. What really unites this politics is that it's seeking to expand the electorate, to bring in semi and non-voters who have completely dropped out of politics. And that's the future basis for our politics. They just need to be activated. I think the problem with excessive optimism about existing movements is that it might run the risk of overstating to what extent we've already activated these people to politics. Like everyone else on the left, I'm far more optimistic today than I was 5 years ago. I'm just very aware that we have a long way to go.
It'll take a lot of work and organizing to make that a reality. I think we have to start now, considering the shortness of time. Bhaskar, it was really good talking to you. Thanks a lot, and we'll talk again.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Bill. I really appreciate it. I appreciate all the work you're doing and for having me on.
So long, Bhaskar.